This is Rebecca Lowe, or Rebecca Lua, if you listen to Suboptimal Radio, and you are listening to Men in Blazers on the NBC Sports Network.
It's unbelievable!
From the Embassy Row studios, in the crap part of Soho, it's the Men in Blazers podcast, Rog.
I'm surprised you're here, Dave-O, and not taking a day off.
Why?
It's the Queen's birthday.
Oh, is it the real one or is it the pretend one?
There's nothing real about her. She's 89 today.
There's a certain successful play on Broadway that would have you sing the other tune, Rog.
The only Queen I like.
Yeah.
Had Freddie Mercury in the middle of it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm more excited about the birthdays of
plenty of Queens I like, Rog.
Iggy Pop.
Yeah.
Tony Danza.
Mm-hmm.
And Tavi Gevinson.
Yeah.
Those four together.
Anyone? First Tavi Gevinson reference on the pod ever. Even for you, that is a little
queen.
Obscure.
The American Queen.
Interesting stuff, Rog.
I love her. Talking about Tavi Gevinson.
Yeah.
I want to talk about two great women, David.
Yeah.
Two great women.
Mm-hmm.
First, in this Daily Mail article that's been sent to us by literally thousands of GFOPs who are as outraged as I was when I read this story.
Yeah, I saw this story. Naturally redhead schoolgirl, 17, banned from lessons.
What?
Until she tones it down because she's too ginger.
Say that again, David.
Too ginger.
Is that possible to be too ginger? Is that a crime in our society?
Sixth form student Emily Rear is barred, because her name is spelled R-E-A-Y, Rear, is barred from classes for being too ginger, a pupil at Trinity School in Carlisle, Cumbria, and claims she has sported the same vibrant ginger hair for the last 3 years. Her school said the colour was inappropriate and asked her to tone it down.
Oh, I love the quote from her in this story.
Yeah.
Where she said, "The school's uniform policy clearly states that there should be no unnatural hair colours like blue or green."
Yeah.
And she asked, "But is ginger not a natural hair colour?"
Yeah.
Hashtag, we stand with gingers.
We stand with gingers.
We don't have many values on this show.
Yeah.
It's probably our only one, actually.
Who's the other woman we're talking about, Rog?
Tracy Chapman.
Oh. Honestly, every time you mention a name or we mention her name, you go a little bit red of cheek.
For good reason.
You get a little bit of a flush.
Yeah. I think it's because
your eyes twinkle a little bit.
Those of you who don't know, Tracy Chapman, who we've been trying to get on this show.
Yeah.
From before there even was a show.
Yeah. I'd like to say we're close to getting her on the show.
Well, the problem is
her agent
claimed that he's no longer her agent. PR people claim they've not worked with her for 10 years. She's literally off the grid.
Yeah.
And then up she pops for no reason. It's not like she's coming back or releasing a new album. On Letterman this week, if you've not seen it, Google it. She sings a version of Stand By Me, which is absolutely nipple tingling. I can't believe she was in our city, David.
Yeah.
And not in the panic room.
Yeah.
I can smell her aftershave just flowing, wafting over the city. It's tormenting me. And the performance was so haunting.
Yeah.
It reminded me of why I love her so. I mocked very badly for talking about her a lot.
Yeah.
I think she's amazing. I think Fast Car, much maligned cliched, but sensational.
No, I know you love that song, Rog.
Can I tell you this?
Yeah.
There's a few songs that I hear in my life, I don't know if you're like this, that you hear the first time ever and just fall in love with them. Most of these songs, you have to work at them, understand the lyrics a bit, get familiar with. Fast Car, it's probably one of three or four songs in my lifetime that I fell in love with within seconds. And the reason that I did, I believe, Dave-O, is that even though Lady Chapman was born in Cleveland, Ohio, and has probably never been to Liverpool, I'd wager, her voice, Dave-O, her voice feels identical to the emotions I experience whenever Everton lose. That's why I love her.
But you are highly sensitive individual, Rog. You're prone to frustration. You worry a lot. You have a little bit the emotional swings, highs and lows. You have days that feel better than others.
I'm a bald.
You're a bald. But the problem, according to an article on bbc.co.uk, Rog, is this might be the downside of being too clever, Rog.
I don't think that's a problem I'll ever have to worry about in my lifetime. It's an amazing article.
Yeah.
David Robson for the BBC.
Yeah.
If ignorance is bliss, does a high IQ equal misery? He writes, we tend to think of geniuses as plagued by angst, frustration and loneliness.
Uh-huh.
Virginia Woolf, Alan Turing, Lisa Simpson. And then he quotes Hemingway, who wrote, happiness in intelligent people is the rarest thing I know. And the article reveals that intelligent people are plagued by so many kind of weaknesses. It's almost impossible for them to be happy. They feel that they've failed to live up to youthful expectations. Mm-hmm. They've got a clearer vision of the world's failings. They're less able to see their own flaws, even while they can agonize about other people's. Essentially, the article says, the search for genius or the quest for genius is a fool's errand. I mean, you live a life where you value wisdom over kind of knowledge. I was fascinated when I read it. Lived experience is something that you value, isn't it, Morden?
Oh, yeah, life. The university of life, Rog, I value. But I'm not sure that... I think frustration, I think anxiety, I think all of these things are common to... are common to all people. I think just maybe the clever, the intelligent, express it more, articulate it more, and don't suppress it as much.
It's so, because when I read this article, David, and it is well worth reading, all I could think about was...
Louis van Gaal.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
I've thought about why I love football so much. It's like a safe, emotionally rich world. You're a passive spectator. It's filled with the most bizarre array of characters outside of Dungeons & Dragons. And it prevents you from being plagued by your own failings, the world failings, your own flaws, or the flaws of those people around you. It's why I love football, David.
Except we've discussed this before. Sometimes I do think we're all guilty of ascribing regular human emotions and our own failings and our own flaws on the players we see playing out in the narrative, on the great stage, in the great theatre of dreams in front of us, Rog. When often they're just trying to, like, kick a ball in the back of the net.
Earn a living.
Yeah, exactly.
Not
earn a living wage of £80,000 a week, which is what Chris Smalling signed for today.
Find happiness,
yeah,
etc. Talking about happiness, this was a weekend, Dave, out for football, in which football was on both NBC and Fox.
Fox, soccer.
At the same time.
Yeah, not everyone was as delighted about that as we were.
The force is strong. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're talking about CBS LA's tweet.
Yeah, KCBS LA, Rog, not particularly happy about it. They tweeted, two of the major over-the-air broadcasters in the US are currently showing soccer.
What?
And then we go into all caps. What the hell happened to this country?
It's evolving for the better,
oh,
David.
That wasn't in the tweet, Rog. No. It was later deleted, we should say.
Yep.
But you can't delete the sentiment.
You can't delete the truth, David.
You can't delete
the truth.
Yeah, it'll be interesting when CBS go after...
LA... FC, right?
Exactly.
Yeah, we were joking.
Yeah, we'll see. Okay, we've got a packed show today, Rog. We're going to break down Chelsea's 1-0 defeat of Manchester United and the apparent cooling of one of the league's biggest bromances, Mourinho and Van Gaal. Barely acknowledged each other, Rog. We'll talk about the FA Cup crazy off between Tim Sherwood's Aston Villa and Brendan Rodgers's Liverpool. And we welcome to the pod a football analyst on his way to becoming the next Arlo White. Could be, with great respect to Arlo, could be even bigger than that. From Full Time Devils YouTube channel and last week's Men in Blazers TV show, 11-year-old Charlie
Woolworth. I'm nervous.
Okay, to the football, Rog.
Oh, I've been dying for this Guinness all day. Because you're rationing them out.
Yeah. Well, I'm running low.
It's austerity, Rog. Budget.
I'm running low. Now, we are 32 or 33, 38ths of the way through the Premier League season, Rog, depending on who you support. And while countless football fans crunch the numbers to determine what they need to make the top four or avoid relegation, it's party time at Stamford Bridge, Rog.
Party time at Stamford Bridge. Party time at Stamford Bridge. Party time. At Stamford Bridge.
Not quite yet. I'm still crunching the numbers, seeing exactly how many more points we've got to get on the board to go and finally secure this title. So I don't get into trouble by Jose Mourinho for saying something about it. Chelsea 1, Manchester United 0. A win high on strategy and low on sex appeal. Despite having less than 30% possession, Chelsea down United behind a 38th minute Eden Hazard goal. Mourinho's men now 10 points clear at the top of the table.
Oh, what a game, Dave. I mean, this is a clash between two teams who've won 8 out of the last 10 Premier League titles between them. United entering on the back of an imperious 6-match winning run.
Momentum.
You expected great things, but then the pre-match press conference with LVG, doom. The Michael Carrot press conference in which he revealed to the world that Michael Carrot, his code word for Michael Carrick, and Daily Blimp would not be playing, nor would Rojo, nor would Jones. And you kind of suddenly realise that this game wasn't quite as advertised Rooney was going to be starting.
The Norwood Jones, though, Rog, was a positive.
Well, who's going to take the corners? They don't take themselves, Dave. Rooney had started midfield, whereas Radamel Falcao was going to morose around up top. And the game became kind of what you imagined it would be. It was like watching Chelsea choke out United over the course of 90 minutes. If you've watched on the Discovery Channel ever, a boa constrictor suffocate a large rat. That's kind of what I felt the game was experientially was like. It was not that easy on the eye.
Yeah, without a doubt. I mean, look, Chelsea's tactics, Mourinho's tactics, would have set up in a brutally defensive fashion. And this team specialises in being brutally defensive. It's what they do week in, week out. They suffocate their opponents. This was a particular brand of brutal defensive tactics. It's Kurt Zouma employed playing man-on-man defence, Rog, on Marouane Fellaini, who's been the architect, along with Carrot, of some of the more incisive Man United play over the last few weeks. He choked them out. Zouma just literally, I've never seen this really in a Premier League game, assigned to man mark for the entire game, and literally the entire game, and take one player out of the game. After the game, Mourinho said, some of Man United's stars were invisible. Literally, I could not see them, is what he said.
It is amazing, and it shows how many managers would have tried to take out Mata?
Yeah.
How many would have tried to take out Marouane Fellaini to prevent United from working the ball out to the wings? Mourinho said after the game, my plan was to control their direct football to Marouane Fellaini and control the wingers from making crosses on the inside foot. Wait for a mistake, score a goal. We were able to make their important players disappear. Nobody saw them. They were in our pockets. I mean, United's smartest moment came in the fourth minute. Rooney had a phenomenal chance from the corner of the box. He hit the back of the net, but it was the wrong side of the back of the net. And it was
that was the side goal of the season.
Oh, it was. And even David De Gea thought it had gone in.
I thought it had gone in. I think you thought it had gone in.
And then he realised it couldn't have been a goal because Louis van Gaal was not slapping Ryan Giggs really hard across the face. And so he tried to take his goal celebration and pretend he was just stretching in a really excited fashion. And after that, Chelsea just snuffed United out. They set up Chelsea. We talked about this together, Dave. Chelsea set up in this game like an away side in a Champions League kind of cagey clash, desperate to avoid conceding and poised to counter like a mongoose.
Yeah, what, 2-3 seasons ago against Barcelona, Rog, when they beat them in the semi-final with that Ramirez runaway goal. It was a very, very similar performance. Although, I think a little bit more strength, as this is what Chelsea have done all season. It's how they've played all season. Van Gaal said after the game that this was, you know, he thought that this was their strongest performance of the season. He thought they played fantastically. I don't think I really saw the same thing. Yes, he had injuries, but Chelsea had injuries. Chelsea had some problems, certainly with their front line in the game as well. But Man United, who've been so brilliant down the wings, we've seen Ashley Young really affecting games in the last few weeks, just stifled, taken out of the game whatsoever. Luke Shaw got down the side. Seems to have quite a lot of pace, that young guy, again. But just didn't have the quality of the final ball to go and hurt Chelsea.
I mean, it didn't really matter about the final ball because the first half, it was like a Premier League striker crap off.
Yeah.
You had Radamel Falcao, who's yet to score against a top six team.
Yeah.
An 87-year-old Didier Drogba.
He's a little older than that, I think.
Man so old, he can still remember Grover Cleveland's presidency. But credit Chelsea, because I can't think of a better team in the Premier League who are good at punishing opponents' mistakes.
Yeah.
There was a poor ball to Falcao. He got steamrolled by John Terry, a man for whom rules, footballing or societal seem
laws
not
of God
to
apply
to.
Yeah.
That beautiful, beautiful, beautiful back heel then ensued. And Hazard ran in on De Gea, nutmegged like Belgian Jordan Morris.
Yeah.
Stunning, Dave. And that knee slide towards the cameras for the big bottom small who seems to be on a one-man crusade to ensure Belgium's known for more than just waffles, beer. As we said on the show, sex den in the basement, serial killers.
Yeah, and I apologise. I thought you were talking about an Austrian crime there, but I did read all about the Belgian serial killer with the sex den in his dungeon last night, Rog.
I love the almost fight that ensued between Terry and Falcao.
Yeah.
It's a bit like seeing poor Britt McHenry square up to angry Dennis Quaid. I'm acting here.
Similar.
I can't even get a line out. Don't Dennis me. But then in the second half, Mourinho just shut the game down. Zouma moved. He became welded to the back four. Oscar started to follow Fellaini around. It was shields up. And United ran down one blind alley after another. Rooney couldn't contribute. He couldn't really create anything from midfield. Luke Shaw, who looks less like a professional soccer player, more a student on a 3 a.m. run, to the Mercado to cure the munchies. And I've got to say, I think attacking teams, this is a point you made to me, are confounded by the presence of Courtois.
Yeah, I think Courtois offers, it's not just the saves he makes in the game, it's the fact that they've seen him make these incredible saves. I think opposing players feel that they've got to hit the ball so perfectly. I think that was behind Rooney's miss in the first half. He just knew he's got to put it in the corner. To beat that large, agile, athletic man, you've just got to be even better.
Yeah, it's a great stat from @HLN in England, who said Thibaut Courtois, 22, made his full debut 6 years ago to the day of the United game. Since then, 262 games, 118 clean sheets and 6 trophies.
The other point, though, Rog, is also you're not trying to, when you're trying to score against Chelsea, particularly at Stamford Bridge, you're not just trying to break down, get the ball past their goalkeeper. You're not just trying to break down their defence, all of whom I thought had a fantastic game. You mentioned Drogba. Is there a striker in the history of the Premier League who's defended better than Didier Drogba? He is essentially a central defender at this point of his career, occasionally playing in an advanced position up towards the front. Everybody on Chelsea's team defends with such discipline. And if they do end up winning the Premier League this season, I say it, put it that way because I don't want to get in trouble with Jose Mourinho, it will be because of that collective will they have to defend and the fact that they'll work so hard for their manager. So,
I mean, United had a lot of energy. This was only their 39th game of the season. Chelsea played 48. Liverpool and Tottenham played the most. I think it's 51.
Yeah.
But what you're saying, that the defensive cohesiveness of Chelsea, it made the rest of the game seem like, you know when you're an uncle and you play fight with your nephew, you place your long arm on the kid's head and let them windmill at you without ever touching you. That's what it looked like watching United trying to take on Chelsea. They were never truly troubled. And the highlight of the second half is watching Matic and Fellaini tussle like a pair of rutting wildebeest down by the corner flag. Made me wonder, Davo, who would win a tag fight if it was Matic and Hazard taking on Fellaini and Mata? If they tag teamed up, who would win that fight?
Weapons or no weapons?
No weapons, it's hands.
No hand weapons,
hands
just
and brains. Hands, brains and hair and bottoms.
So Fellaini and Mata and Hazard and Matic.
Reds against blues. Oh,
I just think Mata's just so nice. I've got two theories. Either Mata is just too nice to be in a fight and he's just going to spend his whole time trying to hug everybody and make it all and make it all better. Or he may be the greatest distraction of all time. It could be that could be the red herring that allows Fellaini to go in with his hidden keys or something to go and do it. But Matic, even if it's no weapons, I believe that Matic will fight dirtier. He's the only one of those players who's from a war zone, unless there's been some war in Belgium that I'm not aware of. But the Serbian, I think he's seen some trouble. I think he can take everybody out, Rush. Yeah,
I think we've seen this fight before. If you watched English wrestling growing up like I did, it was the same as the American wrestling, but much shabbier.
Is this Mick McManus and Giant Haystacks?
It's Big Daddy.
Yeah.
Big Daddy was the force of good, a huge, fat, kind of offensive lineman. He'd always take on two enormous, one of them, Giant Haystacks, and another enormous man.
Yeah.
And for reasons as a five-year-old, six-year-old, I could never understand, he always chooses his tag team partner, a delightful, tiny little man. One of whom was called Alan Kilby. I think that was his name. He was a tiny little fighter. And his shtick, if it was a shtick, was that he was both deaf and mute. And for some reason, Big Daddy would always let him go in the ring first.
Yeah.
And the two big guys would just kick the crap out of him.
Yeah.
Mostly by punching him in the balls.
Yeah.
Which was not legally allowed.
Yeah.
But because he was mute.
Even in fake fighting.
Yeah.
Fake kicking in the balls is not legal in fake fighting.
And because he was mute, he'd go up to the referee and he couldn't speak. And he just kind of wildly gesticulated his own penis to the referee, which the referee didn't understand.
Amazing, because that would seem to be one of the easiest things to sort of demonstrate without the use of speech.
Penis gestures.
And
the crowd would shriek with outrage. And my whole four-year-old sense of injustice was turned upside down until at the last second, Davo, Big Daddy, Reed Fellaini here, would jump into the ring and just kick the crap out both of the baddies. It happened every, I must have watched that fight 50, 60 times possibly. Fellaini and Mata, Big Daddy and Alan Kilby, they win it every game.
So, final whistle, Rog. Chelsea now 10 points clear.
They win the Premier League with 9 more points or with wins in the next 2 games.
Yeah, it's one of those games is against Arsenal, Rog.
I love the shot, Dave, at the final whistle. The cameras went to Roman Abramovich.
Yeah.
The man who brought Chelsea to, quote, inculcate a style of beautiful football.
Yeah.
He tried to smile.
Yeah.
You've given it to me, Jose. You've given me the beautiful football of which I dreamed.
Yeah.
3 shots on target over the last 2 games.
Yeah.
2 ground out, 1-0 victories.
Yeah.
6 points.
Yeah, well, I think winning has become his version of beautiful football. Shevchenko was there in that box, was sort of extraordinary as well.
Probably more useful than Drogba. Yeah. Definitely more useful than Falcao. Jose Mourinho, you said, he was terrifyingly sadistic. He was a bit like the rat catcher from Inglourious Basterds.
It's the happiest I've ever seen him in his post-match conference,
Oh, he was absolutely beaming. United's best players were not visible. The force awakens. The force runs strong in our family. I had it. My sister has it. I thought United played into Chelsea's game plan. It was the game we want, said Mourinho, setter of mousetraps. 71% of possession for United. It could have been 99%, said Mourinho, with a grin. When you play the game strategically.
Yeah, strategically.
Football is talent strategically. That is a sentence of his. Football is talent strategically.
Yeah.
And then they said to him, the Sky guy said, do you like the way they're playing? And he grinned and he goes, I love it.
Yeah.
I love it. Van Gaal, as you said, claimed it was the best match United had played this season. The Sky interviewer said, is that how you see it? And Van Gaal said, you don't? Raise his eyebrow in a deeply, deeply arch way. I couldn't believe it, David. Van Gaal tried to accentuate the positives. He was happy with the performance, disappointed with the result. Bellicose in the post-match conference. Forced derision, bordering on abusive parent riddled with contradictions with journalists. I mean, I'd say credit to Van Gaal in one respect. He has not been bruised by the English press at all this season, which even when he had Phil Jones taking the corners, and that might just be his greatest achievement of the season. But did United really dominate the game, or did Jose Mourinho let them dominate it?
I think they were allowed to play. I don't think Jose Mourinho is in any way afraid of another team's possession. In the places where Man United's possession took place, Rog, their possession was not in dangerous areas. They weren't creating mass chances. I think the entire first half, they created 2 shots on goal, both of which were blocked by defenders, and they were no better in the second half. So I think possession is one of those statistics that doesn't matter a lot when you play against Chelsea. Look, I think United have come a long way in the last few weeks of this season, and I think the loss of Michael Carrick was a massive, massive loss for them. But I think Mourinho won the tactical battle. It's going to be fascinating watching these two guys go against each other as we move into next season. And Chelsea deserve a lot of credit. I know everybody will say, oh, they're brutally defensive. They play a version of football which is ugly. Only Manchester City have scored more goals than them this season, only 2 more. Their goal difference of 39 is better than anybody else in the league. And really, the statistic that counts, played 32, won 23, drawn 7. They've lost 2 games all season. The desire of this team, this collective, this manager and these players to go out and win football games again and again and again and again and again. If you support a team who lose more often than they win, you know how difficult it is just to win football games, to have that winning mentality. It's just very, very impressive.
Yeah, I mean, now let's get to it. The big question everyone in the football world was asking, Davey, what has happened to the burnishing love between young Louis van Gaal, innocent Louis van Gaal, and the romantic Mr. Darcy, Jose Mourinho. If you remember, at Old Trafford.
Yeah, back in October.
Before, during, after the game, they were both pouring at each other like a pair of 14-year-old teens.
Yeah.
On a school trip away from mum and dad for the first time. I was expecting The Notebook.
Yeah.
I would have settled for When Harry Met Sally.
Or at least Sleepless in Seattle, You've Got Mail.
I would have taken a bit of Pretty Woman.
Yeah, but this was 2 weeks' notice. Watched that the other day. This was a wonderful film.
This was a conscious uncoupling.
Yeah, it really was. You had a theory about it, which is interesting, is that now Van Gaal is a threat. So Mourinho's not going to approach him with the same warmth because now his team are good. Now they're doing well to go and do it. But okay, that would explain Mourinho's attitude towards Van Gaal. But Van Gaal is just as cold towards Mourinho. Now, maybe it's because the second that he's been spurned, that Mourinho isn't showing them saying love, Van Gaal is very sensitive. He doesn't want to go and give back if he's not getting anything in return. But I think Van Gaal is... I think Mourinho has managed, and this doesn't seem too extraordinary to anybody who's followed the Premier League for a few years. I think that Mourinho has managed to get on Van Gaal's tits, quite frankly. And I wonder which of a billion comments it was that just got on them.
The beautiful
tits. And he's been eating so much at Wings, they've got a little bit larger over the last few weeks.
I think it's something more practical than that. I think Mourinho is team Miley Cyrus and Van Gaal is very much in the Patrick Schwarzenegger camp.
Could be true.
But if I were a United fan, I would say that is the greatest stock I would take from this game. Not the percentages of possession.
Yeah.
Not the amount we move the ball around. Mm-hmm. But the fact is, right now, Jose Mourinho no longer feels that he's a sweet old uncle that he can like show great love to.
Yeah.
He has to keep now LVG at arm's length because he and United are a true threat. Maybe not this season, but once the transfer window is clicked through over the summer, I think the United of next year are going to be a true menace.
And I'll say one other thing about United that I think is a real positive is that Van Gaal has really found out a lot about his squad and his entire squad in the over the course of this season. Some performances, even this weekend, I thought Paddy McNair was very impressive. I thought Luke Shaw at times was very impressive. Certainly seems to have his speed back. And Chelsea's underlying weakness, even though they've got money to spend, as everybody knows, in the off-season, is that Mourinho has used so few players this season. We really know so little about players beyond the 14th or 15th spot in that squad.
One other quick note. Diego Costa.
Yeah.
Get some help.
Oh, my word. That outfit. It's chav. He really seems to have embraced the English lifestyle, though. Pure chav fashion from Diego in the stands.
There's two tropes a professional soccer player can do when they're injured.
Yeah.
They can wear the club's official outfit.
Yeah.
Somewhat. They can either wear it slickly or subversively, tie undone like a naughty schoolboy. Or if you're really cool, you go with a designer outfit. Not quite sure what was it. It was very Ronnie from Jersey Shore.
Yeah.
Diego Costa, there's people out there that can help you, right, David?
Yeah, you can do it. Okay, while the Premier League was the focus in West London, the Tim Sherwood electric Kool-Aid acid test took Wembley and the FA Cup by storm. Aston Villa 2, Liverpool 1, Rog. What? Aston Villa 2, Liverpool 1. Villa comes from behind to ruin Stevie G's dreams of an FA Cup final-themed birthday party. Coutinho put Liverpool ahead in the 30th minute, but Christian Benteke and Fabian Delph goals send the Villains to their first FA Cup final since 2000.
736 teams started this tournament, David.
Yeah.
Four were left to play with that ball that looks like a decapitated head of an enemy.
It is strangely blood red, faded blood red.
Liverpool, no Lucas, no Ibe, no Sturridge, no Sacco, no Lallana.
Yeah.
Despite that.
Yeah.
Aston Villa, Liverpool. They ran at them, they passed, they moved, they pressed, they unleashed a ferocious confidence going forward. They just overwhelmed their flaccid opponents with an arrogance and swagger. I felt like I was attending Jack Grealish's bar mitzvah, David.
Oh, my word.
This is the day the 19-year-old became a man.
Yeah, the former Gaelic football player, Rog, with his socks around his ankles, wearing little kiddie shin pads underneath his low socks.
And his old boy band quaff.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, a selection battle soon to ensue between Ireland and England. He qualifies for Ireland because his dad, Kevin Grealish, I think his name, from County Dublin, and his paternal grandfather from Galway. Every English fan is now salivating over his skills, which are full-on Peaky Blinders.
Yeah, he's represented Ireland at almost every youth level. Yeah, and not only Grealish. I mean, you've got to give Sherwood credit, Rod. The performance that he's getting out of a lot of players who've been much maligned, cleverly. Rog, Tom Cleverley, I think running around the field, putting in tackles, playing the ball, passing the ball, amazing pass completion statistics. And, you know, those who say, oh, what difference can a manager actually make to a football team? Look at the way the Villa are playing now under Sherwood. Look at how they're playing before. I don't really get it. I don't understand what tactically they're doing better, but they're working hard for each other. They're out-passioning their opponents. And it's just wonderful to watch.
Liverpool scored first here. Brendan Rodgers moved from three at the back to four. And the tweak, that Brendan Rodgers tweak, paid immediate dividends. Villa were punished for sloppy defending. Coutinho knife through.
Yeah.
Like a short fin deal.
Yeah,
a bit of
wiggled.
A deflection.
He
but
wiggled.
It was his three goals in his last five FA Cup games. What amazed me.
Yeah.
And I think amazed Liverpool is that Villa took that blow on the chin.
Oh, I thought you were going to say those shocking yellow shirts. Other than that, it was the fact that Villa took it on the chin. Yeah, Villa took it on the chin. And who else, Rog, but Christian Benteke?
Oh, yeah, Delph dispatched a nipple tingler of a pass. Benteke with the finish. 9 goals in his last 7 games. And I loved how Tim Sherwood, in a desperate, and I'll say deserved attempt to be taken seriously, is now trying to rein in his celebrations, trying to repress his emotions.
Do you think he got a note? in the way that Mrs. B gives me notes on the podcast through you, what? Who gave Tim Sherwood the note that he should calm down his enthusiasm on the sideline?
I think life did, David. Yeah. I think life gave him this experience of celebrating too early.
Yeah.
But I've got to say, watching him mask the fact that he's having an orgasm on the pitch side, it can't be healthy for the lad in the long term.
Yeah, no doubt.
Two changes at halftime. Stevie Gerrard was shunted deeper to get him on the ball. Mario Balotelli was thrown on. Stevie G, Davo, saving himself for the Galaxy. He had a bit of what is known in the trade as a Drogba.
Yeah.
We're a team that's built on passing, playing it quickly, but we were very disappointing in that aspect, and they were much better than us, he said sadly after the game. But Benteke, what a siege gun he is.
Really has come back to form after that injury and is really proving that in the Premier League, in the in these cup competitions, in these elimination games, having a striker who can put the ball in the back of the net makes all the difference. And a word for Fabian Delph, the more I watch this guy, the more I just love the kind of football he plays, my kind of midfielder.
It was the two who combined. It was Benteke brutalising Liverpool's back four single-handedly, setting up Delph and a counter-attack, an orgy of Liverpool defensive errors, to be honest. Delph went, take that, Gloria. And the only question I've got is, why have Aston Villa not been able to do this in the Premier League, David?
Well, they do have a very, very young team. And this is a very, very young team last season, have remained a very young team this year. And, you know, obviously Lambert was not the manager for this squad of players. He didn't inspire them. Something of a disciplinarian, something of a hard man. Probably were terrified of Roy Keane for the first however many games, 15 games of the season, that Roy Keane was there as well. But under the right manager, this group of players are gelling, and there's a lot of talent there. Jack Grealish looks fantastic. I don't know if he'll ever be a, you know, he doesn't seem to score many goals in any part of his career, but his movement and his guile on the ball is just absolutely wonderful
to watch.
And
his swagger.
Yeah.
It's a swagger that Stevie G used to have, but he was so clearly the weak link in this game. Many Liverpool fans were gobsmacked that Brendan Rodgers, perhaps too sentimental here, left him on the field. He ended up wandering around the pitch with a large flob of spit on his chin, discombobulated, shell-shocked, confused. GFOP John Green, who adores Stephen Gerrard.
Yeah, adores him, loves him.
I think he thinks he's the greatest human, the finest human being the Lord has ever created. Yeah. He told me that the trauma of watching his favourite player suffer through his worst game ever made him experience the same depths of misery as when he first read the Philip Larkin poem, High Windows. Rather than words comes the thought of high windows, the sun comprehending glass, and beyond it the deep blue air that shows nothing and is nowhere and is endless. I love the shots, David.
John Green is American Rog. He's just American Rog.
He's American Rog, who's cleverer, much cleverer, and despite being clever, has found happiness.
Yeah.
Damn you, BBC.
And enormous wealth.
I love the shots of Villa fans, David. Mm-hmm. At the end of the game, they had no idea whatsoever about how to be happy at a football game. It was like watching them celebrate. It was like seeing baby horses learn how to walk before your eyes, like all flobbing all over the floor.
I love watching baby horses learn how to walk. This was one of my favourites.
This was the team, David. Remember this. They had to cancel their goal of the month competition in October.
Because they had no goal in that month.
Yeah.
Genius.
Yeah. I'm thrilled for them. Thrilled for Tim Sherwood. They've 659 minutes without a goal this season. Now they're off to an FA Cup final. Football's amazing. Yeah. It really is. A lot to be. I tell you what is also amazing to me. Mm-hmm. How much is being made of the fact that Brendan Rodgers is the first Liverpool manager since 1950 to not win a trophy in his first 3 years. The scrutiny, so intense, Davo.
Yeah.
Do you understand it?
Yeah, I do. I mean, Liverpool fans, and you know, Brendan Rodgers played into it with the interview he gave this week, that they regard it as the biggest club in Britain, them and Man United, bigger clubs, no clubs.
Take Manchester City 20 years
to be as big as Liverpool. And I think he manages a big club, and that's part of what comes with that legend and the ghosts of trophies past and the ghosts of successes past. I'm just confused about Brendan Rodgers. I myself, I'm not a Liverpool fan, and I can't decide whether the guy is a genius or whether he's a complete fraud. I could not tell you. There are moments I believe it's one thing and moments I believe it's the other. Certainly tactically, I think he was completely, completely outplayed by a Villa team coached by Tim Sherwood.
And not a single Liverpool player, I believe an outfield player, ended in the same position that they began. It wasn't for want of him tweaking. I mean, Liverpool season started badly. He was on the rocks. Yes, I may be fired, he said, I think about 10 games in. And then they went on an incredible 30-match unbeaten run from December into March. And there was talk about being manager, but this is an even greater triumph than last season. And now they're already, maybe it's time for him to get. I think, to your question, fraud or genius, I think part of him is very Bobby Valentine, the baseball manager, who didn't like to just win, but he couldn't win without making double switches and ingenious defensive shifts so that he was the story.
Oh, he wanted the win to be about him.
He wanted a win. He has to make himself, his genius, the focus of the attention. I've talked a lot on the pod in the past about law school Andy Myers, a ginger, who was double jointed in his hips and could actually, was blessed by the Lord, he could fillet himself.
Yeah.
And when we were bored at law school, we'd go into the locker room and he'd show us that trick you can do, Andy.
Yeah.
Whenever I hear Brendan Rodgers in a press conference, I think of Andy Myers' ginger head plummeting down south, David. I mean, it was a massive achievement last season, qualifying for the Champions League.
Yeah.
Their European campaign turned out to be a flaccid, damp squib.
Yeah.
But he's had them challenging for the top four. He's had them in semi-finals. His transfer dealings have not passed muster. And I'm guessing the true test for him will be how he navigates the trauma of the post-Steven Gerrard era. And he deserves a season to assert himself post-legend. Question is, what can he do, Davo, to change things? He's already got a fake tan sprayed on.
Yeah.
He's got the new dentures. He's had his hair straightened. He's lost 40 pounds. What else can he do, Davo?
Yeah.
Just let it all go to crap, Brendan. Yeah. Succumb to the pies.
Well, look, Liverpool fans will they'll be outraged if we don't mention that he lost Suarez, that Sturridge has been injured for most of the season. And he's discovered some very, very good players. And he's brought some young players into the squad. Jordan Ibe looks to be the next great star at Liverpool. But I don't know what he can do.
The next John Flanagan.
Yeah, Flanagan's mole, maybe. In the final, Rog, Aston Villa will play Arsenal. They beat Reading 2-1. Arsenal, they needed extra time and a howler from Biscuits keeper Adam Federici to defeat a scrappy championship side. After scoring once in regular time, Alexis Sanchez's seemingly benign 106th minute effort found its way through Federici's legs and across the line. Arsene Wenger's men heading to their second straight FA Cup final, Rog. But they weren't necessarily the best team.
Before the game, Michael Cohen.
Yeah.
My Arsenal loving mate.
Your mate.
He called me up.
We're Giroud's team now.
Yeah, with no trace of humour.
Yeah.
He told me, we're going to win the double this season.
I've said Arsenal's title to lose, Rog.
Yeah. He said, we're going to win the double. I see it. And he spelled out exactly how it was going to go in no part in his vision.
Did that involve Chelsea losing to Manchester United?
Nor did it involve Reading taking this Arsenal team into extra time in a game that was tighter than an Arsenal jersey, David.
Yeah.
Two goals for Alexis Sanchez. The first courtesy of one of the passes of the season for Mesut Ozil.
Oh,
the second, because Reading made a basic footballing mistake.
Yeah.
You don't feel Bill Buckner in goal.
Yeah.
And worse, you don't put an Arsenal reject goalkeeper in goal.
Against Arsenal.
Yeah, oh, poor Adam Federici.
Yeah.
Watching him flat on his face on the Wembley turf once the ball had wiggled through his legs, I felt terrible for him because we've all been there.
Yeah.
We've all been there. Arsene Wenger's definitely been there and he spoke beautifully after the game. He said, once it's done, you have to live with that. We're not equal in front of that. Some carry that kind of mistake their whole life. Some recover quickly and forget about it. You can minor a bit the scale of the incident and tell him, it was not only him, but it kind of was only him. Huh?
Yeah, it kind of was.
Chris Christie's Wembley dream comes true, Dave.
Yes, big gooner.
And two US control teams will compete for the FA Cup final for the first time since 1776. Sport of the future.
Yeah, future. Okay, back to the Premier League, Rog. In the race for the top four, Manchester City 2, West Ham 0. City rebound from last week's derby defeat against a seemingly disinterested West Ham, Rog. A James Collins own goal. A classic, actually. And Sergio Aguero's 20th of the season. C City goes 7 points clear of Liverpool for the final Champions League spot.
Yep, for a tormented team.
Yeah.
West Ham are the perfect patsies.
Yeah.
They were mentally vacation all we ever wanted. The story going into this game was all Yaya Toure.
Mm-hmm.
His agent blasted City. His agent, Dimitri Selak.
Mm-hmm.
He said, the problem is that City want Yaya to do everything. They want him to score goals. They want him to assist goals. They want him to defend. He cannot do it all on his own.
He's not Didier Drogba.
So what did Pellegrini do?
Yeah.
He made him captain.
Yeah.
Possibly Yeah, his toughest role is he had to pretend to give a crap. And I thought he did it pretty well. He did it pretty damn well indeed, but he didn't really need to try too hard because this was West Ham, late in the season, West Ham. A phenomenal end goal from James Collins, David.
Yeah, 18th minute. Navas had something to do with this goal, Rog, which was really the most remarkable thing about it. Crosses the ball in. James Collins, a pretty amazing strike over the head of his keeper, Adrian.
Yeah, James Collins, thrice cursed. He's bald, he's ginger, and he's bad at football.
Yeah.
Second from Sergio Aguero, 20 league goals this season for that gentleman, Big Sam. Had the look of a man who was less interested in managing a football team, more eager to make sweet, sweet love to a steak and kidney pie. The British tabloid, the gutter press, the repulsive outlet, The Sun, had a story in this morning that Sam Allardyce's English quote advisors have been sounding out jobs in the USA, Davo.
Mm-hmm.
And then they added, although there are no vacancies at the moment, make it true. It says Big Sam's always fancied a new challenge and is open to the idea of managing a team in Major League Soccer.
Wow. I thought maybe he was looking for another job, like Secretary of Defence or something like that.
I think he'd quite like to work at Crystal Burger.
Yeah, we'll see.
Can you imagine if he took over from Bruce Arena in LA?
Yeah.
In-N-Out Burger could just rename itself as In-Burger.
Yeah.
He'd never leave.
Yeah.
Make it happen. We'll Don see. Garber, make it happen.
That would be such good.
You pay him in pie.
It would be so good for the league. Newcastle 1, Tottenham 3. Rog, top four hopes still alive for Spurs fans after beating the Toon in Tyneside. Among the scorers, Sir Harry of Kane, who notched his 30th of the season in all competitions, and his 20th, Rog, in the Premier League.
Oh, but sad scenes at Newcastle, which is beginning to seem ever more like Marine.
Mm-hmm.
Without the good weather and with more Sons of Harpies. We saw a new website was launched, Davo.
Yeah.
From the people who brought you sackpodu.com.
That went well.
The website which had a successful IPO.
Yeah.
They've unveiled ashleyout.com.
Oh, well, let's hope that goes a little bit better than sackpodu.com.
I feel terrible for the organisers. They wrote in the Telegraph, the decision to organise a boycott. It's not a knee-jerk reaction to a woeful season, not a sudden flash of anger caused by five successive defeats. It's the culmination of 8 years of frustration, alienation, resentment, and that horrible, sickening feeling, something you love, is being harmed. I wake up with that feeling every morning. But I feel terrible for them. I mean, Newcastle are kind of like the Knicks, the Raiders, the Browns, the Redskins, all rolled into one team. Daenerys in Marine minus Dragon equals Mike Ashley in Newcastle.
I fear that this whole situation is not going to end well.
I've got some advice for the protesters, though.
Yeah.
When you sadly chant, "you fat bastard," mm-hmm. at Mike Ashley,
you might want to look in the mirror first.
It's the most non-specific, all-inclusive statement I think you can make.
Yeah.
In Newcastle. The Spurs, David.
Yeah.
They were announced as opponents for the MLS All-Star Game, July 29th in Colorado.
Sir Harry of Kane.
We'll be playing for Real Madrid probably by then.
Yeah.
But Arsenal owner Stan Kroenke, his team, the Colorado Rapids, in their home stadium. Well, uh-huh. Who's Spurs?
Amazing stuff.
It's a bit weird.
A bit weird.
Probably big grudge match for Stan.
Yeah, exactly. Well,
it's not quite clear he knows he owns Arsenal.
Yeah,
no.
Yeah, we might have to let him know. Stoke City 2, Rog. Southampton 1. Was hoping both teams would find a way to wear red and white vertical stripes in this game. Southampton's Champions League dreams take a big blow as they fall at the Britannia. An 84th minute Charlie Adam winner leaves them in 7th place, 8 points off the top four.
First time Southampton had lost after taking the lead this season.
Amazing stuff. A shake-up in the battle at the bottom of the table, Rog. Leicester City 2, Swansea City 0. Amazing performance from Leicester, Rog. Foxes win their third straight to move off the bottom of the table. They're waxing for the first time since November. Goals from Argentine striker Leonardo Ochoa and Andy King leave Leicester, he's not Argentinian, leave Leicester in 18th place, level on points with Hull and inching closer to the great escape, Rog.
Yeah, as my wife said to me, what could be more English than this? The most excitement in the Premier League this season is about relegation, sorting out exactly who the worst teams are.
Yeah.
She thinks there's nothing more English. But this Leicester story, David,
yeah,
it's Papillon. Mm-hmm. It's Steve McQueen's great escape. It's prison break. Three straight wins. Ochoa's first goal since Boxing Day. Watching Nigel Pearson celebrate after the game.
Yeah.
It was like watching, in human form, the thin line between love and hate.
Yeah.
This is a man who strangled an opposing player, who told Leicester's own fans to F off.
Yeah.
Told journalists to piss off.
Yeah.
But after three straight wins, Davo, he saluted the King Power faithful.
Yeah.
Who exulted in his snarling glory.
Yeah.
How much do you love me now?
Yeah.
Pricks.
It's amazing. He didn't commit a single act of violence or insult anyone after this game. It's the first time I've really been worried about Leicester for a few weeks, Roger.
Pricks.
Crystal Palace 0, West Brom 2. Tony Pulis returns to Selhurst Park and takes all 3 points.
Daddy's back.
Morrison header and a Craig Gardner 25-yard screamer send the Baggies 8 points clear of the drop zone. Everton, Rog, your beloved Everton, 1. Oh, Burnley, poor Burnley, 0. A first half Kevin Morales goal sinks 10-man Burnley and sends them to the very bottom of the table. Rog, you watched the game. Thoughts?
Didn't watch it.
You did?
Didn't.
Oh, you for didn't. Two That's reasons. Why they won.
I've learned late on this season, if I don't watch Everton, they get 3 points.
Yeah.
If I'd realised that earlier in the season, Everton would have won the league by now.
Oh, Rog.
But I also didn't want to watch this game because it was like watching Everton club baby seals, which is how I
You're
feel
You're a humanitarian.
About it's like watching Bambi's mum get shot by hunters.
Yeah.
I mean, Everton had their requisite non-Leighton Baines taken penalty miss.
Yeah.
Which is like having an offensive lineman take a crucial field goal when your team has Adam Vinatieri on it.
Yeah.
Burnley were reduced to...
It's in their league agreement that they've got to do that, Roger.
Burnley were reduced to 10 men in the first half. Ashley Barnes, a player so bad he can't even commit heinous fouls competently. And that was kind of it. An Everton goal, lots of shots of Sean Dyche, the most menacing sideburns in football.
Yeah.
He's got like side swords now.
Mm-hmm.
And a sad nap for Burnley. Their goals have dried up. Danny Ings, 8 games without a goal. Everton Football Club have broken 40 points. Can I start watching them again now, David?
Yeah, you can, Rog. You can. You've reached a 40-point level. In the Championship, Rog, only 2 games left to find out which teams will replace those relegated from the Premier League. The race at the top of the Championship, very tight. Watford are top right now on 85 points. Bournemouth and Middlesbrough are both on 84. Norwich on 82. The top two teams go up automatically. Places 3 through 6 then take part in a 4-team single elimination playoff for the final promotion spot. Those are amazing
what
games.
A run-in. Ipswich, team beloved to producer JW, have 75
American
points.
American David Silver.
With 2 games to play and could still miss the playoffs.
Oh.
Can we get a thumbs up or thumbs down on whether you think they're going to make the playoffs,
Mick
JW?
McCarthy's Ipswich.
Oh, grimace.
Oh, thumbs down.
Thumbs down. I've got to say, the whole top eight cannot blink.
Yeah.
And I'm rooting for Bournemouth, who are currently second, but only just a club that began the 2008 season in League Two on minus 17 points, whose stadium seats 11,700 people and were within 24 hours of liquidation, bankruptcy 3 times in 6 months, but are now within kind of touching distance of the Premier League. We'd be the smallest club to ever play in the Premier League, said Chairman Jeff Mostyn. It would be the greatest fairy tale since Hans Christian Andersen wrote his last one. Oh, they could be hair of the dog for us if Burnley are relegated, David.
Yeah. In midweek, the United States of America 2, Mexico 0, Rog. The Von Trapps defeated Miguel Herrera-led Mexico in San Antonio 2-0. Stanford University sophomore Jordan Morris put the U.S. up 1-0, scoring in his first ever start for the full men's team. New England Revolution striker Juan Agudelo added a second after coming on as a sub.
Oh, those who don't know history are doomed to repeat it. Hashtag Dosacero. Well, it was a bit of an odd game, Davo. It wasn't really the Mexican national team the US were playing. It was just 11 random Mexicans. And the turf, it was even worse than the new US jerseys. That's how bad. It was like Glenn Murray's hair.
Oh.
It looked like it was covered in broken bottles, crack vials and cow pats. It was more like a tough mud-up than it was a football game. But let's not take anything away from it. Mix Discarude, Kyle Beckerman gave the US their most beautiful hair midfield I've ever seen. Michael Bradley had a great game. Mick subbed out for Brad Evans towards the end. And I've never witnessed a more handsome exchange of players in football. It was like going to Abercrombie and Fitch to buy a sweatshirt. And we have a new saviour.
Yes, Jordan Morris.
20-year-old Stanford student.
He has risen.
At STKelly82 tweeted us, Stanford Messi, much derided before the game.
Yeah.
The undeclared major. Yeah. He had real legs. When by the way, when San Marino filled in international, who's a barman or a plumber, we laugh.
Yeah.
And think it's adorable. We should probably do it a lot more here in America. He opened the scoring. And then a breathless Julie Stewart-Binks interviewed him post-game.
Mm.
And he got to speak to a girl for the first time.
Not just a girl, JSB, Rog.
What a night. What a night. At Charlie Lex, when Jordan Morris gets back to Stanford, who wants to sex Jordan Morris? Final score, Jurgen 2. Those who hold Jurgen in contempt, 0. The US next face the Netherlands on the 5th of June, and Germany 5 days after that. Bring them on. Do you know who the last amateur to play for England was?
No, I don't.
You don't remember Bernard Joy of the Corinthians and Arsenal?
Oh.
Got one cap in 1936 when we lost to Belgium, 3-2.
Mainly because none of our players are bright enough to go to university, Rog, so we can't select any students.
English Jordan Morris. Can I just say about CONCACAF?
Yeah.
Well done, CONCACAF.
Yeah, well done, CONCACAF.
For having the courage to stand up to Sepp Blatter, finally.
Yeah.
I sleep easier knowing that I live in a region which is value-driven and not afraid to stand up for the little guy. In case you missed it, Sepp Blatter attended the CONCACAF Congress.
Yeah, Trinidad and Tobago FA President Raymond Tim Key, who praised Blatter as the father of football, while the president of the Dominican Republic Federation, Osiris Guzman, compared the 79-year-old Swiss to Moses, Abraham Lincoln, Winston Churchill, and Martin Luther King, as well as Jesus and Mandela. They were just reading their script, Rog. Can't criticise them.
Well done, CONCACAF. Thank you. I mean, what a busy week for Sepp Blatter.
Mm-hmm.
He then went to Russia to sit down with Vladimir Putin.
Yeah.
One of the... I'm trying to think, David. Can you think of a more evil photo shoot? Because I don't believe Hitler and Stalin ever met.
No.
And then he told detractors of the 2018 World Cup in Russia, stay at home.
They don't care. They're going to play the whole tournament behind closed doors if they have to. I mean, part of me... I said to you when I came in this morning that I now have absolutely no interest of going to the Russian World Cup. I just have no interest in going to Russia for the World Cup. I know that's no way to negotiate with Fox, but I have no interest in going to the World Cup in Russia. And I just think Blatter, but it may be the best thing that he's ever done for the good of the World Cup forever. He might be about to just kill the tournament.
I feel like these are the words, stay at home, fans, if you don't like it. These are the words of a man who never read The Goose and the Golden Egg.
Yeah.
But we are going to go to Russia, Fox.
Oh, we are?
Yeah, okay. We're going to only broadcast from places that Alexander Solzhenitsyn wrote about. We're going to do a gulag tour.
We're in Siberia.
It'd be amazing.
Oh, dear.
Can we have happy FIFA news?
Yes.
That the goalkeeper tweeted, Sarah McLaughlin and Tegan and Sarah are the opening ceremony artists for FIFA Women's World Cup.
Right up to date then.
Indigo Girls, WTF. FIFA Tracy Chapman is available.
Rog, our guest today, one of our favourite English football analysts of all time.
He's a Gary Neville in the making.
He is. He first came to our attention on the YouTube channel Full Time Devils, giving his passionate take on Manchester United's 4-2 victory over City. Ladies and gentlemen, we welcome to the pod 11-year-old Charlie Woolwork. Hey, Charlie.
Hi, guys.
So good to have you on, Charlie.
It's great to be on. I just want to thank you for the opportunity, and I hope it's good over there.
Oh, we're honoured to have you. You're bigger than One Direction over here right now, Charlie. What surprises me most about you, and even more surprising than you're just 11, is that you're a Manchester United fan, but you're actually from Manchester.
I am from Manchester. I am.
Very rare thing in this world. Can you describe Manchester to Americans who've never been there, your city?
Well, it's divided in half by blue and red. You know, it's United or City of Manchester, and most of it was dominated by United over the past couple of years, and now City fans are starting to come in as well. So it's a great city with a great rivalry, and I just love it. Couldn't think of anywhere else to be.
And is your family solidly red? Do you have any relatives that are blue, or is everyone a red?
No relatives blue, we're all red. I'm so lucky with that.
And how about friends? How about people you know? Are you friends with any blues, or are all of your friends? Is that the litmus test for you? Has everyone got to be a red?
No, I've got a couple of friends that are blues. So it's great to have a bit of fun with them. You know, if they beat us or we beat them, or there's a big result in the club's history. Really, it's just good fun.
You're just 11. Do you remember United when they were a truly good team?
Rog.
Well, Well, I still think we're a good team. Maybe not hitting the standards that we used to be. But, yeah, I do remember a bit of it. Like, I didn't really take an interest too much when I was younger, but started to come on at around the age of 7. And then ever since, I've been a through and through red, diehard Manchester United fan.
And what is your greatest memory as a Man United fan? What is the greatest moment for you in your brief history supporting United?
In recent history, when I've been supporting United, 2012-13 season, Fergie's last year, we go and win the Premier League after City have won it on goal difference the year before.
Yeah.
So that was brilliant.
How did all this kind of this new career, this new development, you as a pundit start? I mean, we all know Mozart, public performances age 4, Bobby Fischer became chess champion at 14, Michael Jackson, God forbid Charlie, Michael Jackson, but he was 5 when he joined the Jacksons. How did it begin?
I didn't know that.
How did it begin for you that you became Charlie the pundit?
I was at the City United game at the Etihad earlier in the season, and I was just walking out, and I was quite happy. Not obviously with the result, but the way we played, I thought we played well. It was Chris Smalling's red card, in my opinion, that kind of meant City were going to go on and win it. But so I met Adam McCullough before the gates outside the ground, and from that he asked me to comment on the game. I did, and well, it went a bit further than I expected, is all I'm going to say.
Yeah, it's you've done several, multiple appearances on that channel now, Charlie. A word you use a lot, because I've watched all of them, and the word that comes up almost every time is passion. And you're responsible for one of our favourite expressions. We use it now all the time on our show.
We out-passioned them today.
I love that. Can you say that for me in your accent? I love we out-passioned them. Can you say it for me, Charlie?
We out-passioned them.
I love that. I love that, Charlie. Where did you make up that word? Did somebody use it in your family? Where did you hear we out-passioned them?
Yeah, me and my dad were just messing around one night. Well, we came back from the United game and we started talking about the passion the team had showed, and we came up with a word. We thought it was a brilliant word to use.
What we want to know is, and we really need your help, Charlie, what is the secret to good punditry? We need to know the answer to this as much as anybody. What, do you take notes during the match? How do you organise your thoughts before you take the microphone? Because you're so coherent.
Well, it's... obviously, I don't know what questions Adam's going to ask, so I've got to prepare for every single question that he's going to say. And just to be honest, you just got to enjoy the game. And if you enjoy the game, you know about the team that you're going to be commenting about, then I think you'll be all right. Anyone who knows about the team that they want to comment on, the team that they are going to comment on, and has watched the game properly, then yeah, I think anyone can be a good pundit.
Has being on the TV changed your life, Charlie? On the school on the schoolyard and off it?
Yeah, it has. I was a bit scared of the internet before all this happened, and now it changed my life massively, and it's just great. I love it.
Well, what did you say to your classmates who are City fans after the 4-2 derby win?
City didn't have the lead for too long. I had to use that, but I just had a joke with them. Obviously they weren't too happy, but I let this one slide just because they didn't give me too much early in the season.
So today is the 1-year anniversary of David Moyes leaving Manchester United. It's been it's been a roller coaster of a year, Charlie, I would say, for you. So what is your current feeling about this squad and about this team? And how are you feeling about the players? Give me some of the strengths of this squad and some of the weaknesses.
I think obviously in the fence that there's a bit of a weakness there. But Chris Smalling's come on well. I honestly love Marcus Rojo, and I think a couple of the players that have come on from last year and the years before, like Ashley Young and my mum for winning it. I think they've done really well this year. But the fence, I think we need to strengthen in the summer. Really, apart from that, maybe a long-term replacement for Carrick when he starts to get a bit old. But
Michael Carrick.
You know, yeah, definitely. Michael Carrick is Lou Van Gaal.
Exactly.
I love it when you say Chris Smalling. I think after the Sunderland game, you said Chris Smalling. And then you check yourself and you said Chris Smalling with all the astonishment of a man who can't believe that they're praising Chris Smalling.
Yeah.
You said, Chris Smalling?
Chris Smalling? Chris Smalling?
What about LVG? How much do you love that man?
Well, I think when he came in and he started saying it'll take 3 months, and then it went 3 months and he still hadn't transformed the team, I was starting to think to myself, does he really know what he's doing in the Premier League? Is Brendan Rodgers right saying he'll get a shock? But he's proved all the doubters wrong. He proved me wrong early in the season, and he's transformed this team. If you look back 6 months ago and now you look at this team, it's amazing.
Okay, so Charlie, I want you to give me the your top four predictions and in order of where they're going to finish.
In order?
Yeah.
Oh, gosh. Oh, I'm still not deciding whether we're going to get second or third. I hope we get second, obviously. I think Chelsea have won the league now. But between us and Arsenal, it may be a hard clash. So what I'm going to say is, I think it's going to be City fourth, us third, Arsenal second, Chelsea third. Or, obviously, with us playing Arsenal on the last day of the season, I think it's the last day of the season at least, we could then nick their spot, say if they're ahead of us. So I think it's going to come down to that.
Amazing
and
stuff.
And we're going to have to hope for Chelsea to beat them now.
And next season?
Next season, I hope we go for the title. I hope Manchester United go for the title. If we win the title, that would be absolutely amazing. I think Louis van Gaal would be put in Manchester United folklore and stay there for the rest of the time.
He'll never have to pay for his dinner at Wings again, Charlie.
Oh, exactly. They built a statue of him at Wings. Who did you grow up listening to talk about football? Because it strikes me that you couldn't be this smart, you couldn't be this articulate talking about football unless you had a role model either on television or close to you.
To be honest, like I said, early days, not really too interested in football. It only caught me when I was about 7 or 8 years old. And lots of my friends had already started playing football. They were playing for teams, you know. Some of them had already been scouted for Manchester United and Manchester City, teams like that. So I came into football late, but I just loved the game now. And I just can't believe I actually rejected it early on, because it's not one of the best, it's the best in the world.
What were you interested in before you got into football?
Pokemon. I mean,
Power Rangers.
With all seriousness, Pokemon's loss
is football's game.
The football world's game. We are honoured to full time Devils for finding you and sourcing you, because apart from Juan Mata,
yeah,
you are, I'd say, in America, the thing that is most beloved by all Americans who love football, even if they don't care for Manchester United. When I was 11, Charlie, my dreams kind of went as far as being a member of ABBA, the one with the beard, and scoring the winning goal in the World Cup final for England.
Yeah.
Silly dreams. Yeah. Silly dreams that could never come
Weirdly,
true in my life.
Weirdly, the first one was more likely than the second one.
What's your dream, Charlie, to play for Manchester United or to commentate on them? To commentate on them in the booth?
Well, obviously, I'd love to be a player for Manchester United, but when I look at my ability, will I be able to get into that squad? Probably not. So I think a more realistic goal would be to be commentating on Manchester United. And I just love football, no matter which club it is, but Manchester United is my passion at the end of the day.
We are delighted to speak to you. We wish you to continue in the way you've started and to go from strength to strength. Listeners who want to follow you on Twitter, @CharlieIsARed, a great follow. We should also thank @FullTimeDevils for finding you and unleashing you on the world.
Yeah, great discovery. Great talent discovery there One day remember us when you come to America and become a massive star, Charlie. We want you to remember the little humble men in blazers, the two older bald guys who interviewed you on their podcast back in 2015.
I hope I get there someday, but I hope you guys are there with me because, you know, thank you for having me on.
Oh, we really appreciate you being on with us, Charlie.
Oh, what a bloke, David.
What a fantastic bloke.
I've got to tell you, before him, my favourite child prodigy was those twins, Johnny and Luther Hutu. The twins who led the Guerrilla's Army, God's Army of the Holy Mountain in Burma in the 90s.
Really, those were your favourites?
Yeah, they were 12 years of age.
Interesting.
They smoked cigars when journalists met them, and they led grown men into battle because those grown men believed that they could make bullets not powerful against them.
Yeah.
I thought that was pretty an unbelievable story.
Yeah, Charlie Walworth's taken them. Is
Charlie
that what you're
has
saying?
Taken them.
Yeah, he's certainly taken them. Yeah, he's so good. I just love his honest enthusiasm. When he talks about how much he loves football, which sometimes you hear people say that, it feels a little it's so genuine, it's so real.
Yeah, but when he said Pokemon, I started to love Pokemon. He said it's about all things. We've got a great tweet. It's not just us. At Sonny Powell said, at Men in Blazers, I just told my co-workers we must out-passion them and work like 11 people who are best friends. Sadly, it does not have the same effect in logistics.
Okay, Rog, on to the Ravens. Our first Raven is from Emily Egan White. How did you manage to get Aachen to talk to you? Mutual baldness. How did we manage that, Rog? Great job, by the way.
You talking about our everyday normal pod that we dropped on Monday?
Yeah.
Where I interviewed Aachen Robin.
Amazing stuff.
About how the dodgy flapper works, the mechanics and the training of the dodgy flapper.
Uh-huh. Don't stare into the eye.
He loves the pod. Yeah. He's a GFOP.
Uh-huh.
He got listening when we had Stephen Malkmus on.
Yeah.
He loved that one. And he just said, I'd love to be on it. Or you could say that we're beneficiaries of the global arms race to win over American hearts and minds. And the English Premier League has had a head start. La Liga and Bundesliga, or I guess Barca, Real Madrid and Bayern, are all trying to work out how to close that gap. And they all want their players to speak to the American audience directly. I also think, Dave, we talked about this a couple of times together, there is a difference in how Americans cover football from how, say, the British press pack cover football and the teams. I mean, I went to interview an English Premier League manager a couple of weeks ago and I had hours with him, and then they very quickly shoved him in front of 40 English journalists, and he was in there for 5 minutes. It was a horrible interaction, and then he just slammed the door shut and got as far away from them as he could. And I think Americans want to emotionally connect to the stars, to think about how they think and feel. The kind of writing pioneered by my favourite writer, Simon Kuiper, in his book Soccer Men. And in England, there's this 24-hour news cycle that the journalists are slaves to that forces them to be abrasive in their face, to force themselves upon an interview subject.
Winner of the coveted Guinness Men in Blazers Poet, Philosopher, Soccer Scribe, Raven of the Week is Stephen Logan from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Men in Blazers. Recently, my aunt and uncle had their first baby boy. Congratulations. They live in the land of tiny bananas and milk that does not need refrigeration, Brazil. My aunt is Brazilian while my uncle is American. When we found out the baby was going to be a boy, our first thought was, how can we convince him to eventually play for the US men's national team, channeling our inner Jürgen and recruiting
Let's
abroad.
Do it.
To sweeten the deal, we thought the baby should be named Ronaldo. Number one, because he will be Brazilian. And number two, because it leads amazing soccer players. See Cristiano, Ronaldinho, and of course, Ronaldo. I suppose leads them to become successful footballers. But with the performance of Jordan Morris, I now believe Jordan has to be up there for names leading to becoming professional footballers, with Ibe and Henderson not far behind Morris, of course. I would now consider it for my own child if I ever have one. My question is, if you were to name a son, would you factor in your favourite player team coach? Or is that just too much pressure, much like we think it is in America or England to name our children? Jesus. Obrigado, Steve Logan, Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Well, we've both had sons, Rod, so we've been through the naming of sons before.
Yeah, and we've both talked about how when you are negotiating a name with a partner, just come up with, throw out your first, your wacky list of names, and then negotiate inwards. So like my opening shortlist with my wife was Pele, Hector, or Primo, after Primo Levi. And then you negotiate inwards to the name that you really want.
Uh-huh.
If you want a footballer, it's not really about first name. It's more about second name. Uh-huh. Taylor, Smith, Jones, Johnson, Hughes, or Wright. If those are your name, I think you've probably got a higher chance, David, looking at Premier League shirts of becoming a footballer.
Mm-hmm.
But, if you were going to name a kid after a footballer, who would it be?
Probably Catamol. Although I like Delf. Fabian.
Delf
Fabian
Davis
would be a good name. Delf Davis. Fabian Delf Davis would be a good name.
If I was going to name a kid after a footballer, I'd name him after Albert Camus, the goalkeeper / writer. Mm-hmm. Camus Bennett or Kyle. Kyle Bennett after Beckham or Stevie. Lots of Stevies in the football world. Truth is, if you want to play for America, here's how you do it. Give your child any name that begins with a letter J. Jurgen likes J names. Yeah. He loves to shout them out. Good Julian!
Yeah.
Josie, come on, Josie!
Josie!
And I guess Jordan Morris.
Yeah.
So
Jordan! Jordan!
Come and get a sweetie! So I guess
declare your major, Jordan! Declare your major!
Take your major to the next level! Jamal, Jaquan, anything but Jaden. Anything but Jaden with a J and your kid probably will be playing for America.
Yeah, good. Good theory, Rog.
Julian!
Your weekend looks like this.
Jordan!
Your weekend looks like this. Burnley versus...
You're not Henderson, you're not Ibe, you're Jordan Morris!
Your weekend looks like this. Burnley versus Leicester, 10 a.m. Saturday. Everton versus Manchester United, 8:30 a.m.
We're going to win up. We're watching.
Sunday, Arsenal versus Chelsea. Rog, strikerless. Chelsea, striker crisis at Chelsea. That's 11 a.m. on Sunday.
Oh, the fight, Wenger and Mourinho. It's bigger than Manny against...
Mayweather.
Yeah. That is only
pay-per-view revenues. Pay-per-view revenues are going to be...
I bet you that could do better box office. I promise you. If you got Wenger and Mourinho in a ring in Vegas...
Yeah, with giant haystacks and Big Daddy.
And Alan Kilvey on the undercard.
That would be an amazing fight. All those games are on the NBC family, Rog, of networks.
Are we part of that family?
Yeah, we're like the bastard stepchildren. 2 o'clock in the morning airtime.
Thank you, NHL.
Last night gives evidence.
By the way, people who want to know when our show is going to be on now because of the NHL hockey playoffs.
We have no idea.
The answer is we're on when Jeremy Roenick tells us we can be on.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and we do have absolutely no control of this whatsoever.
And we don't enjoy it either. People who tweet us asking us if we're taking them for granted by moving our times around.
We have no power whatsoever. My favourite suggestion, though, is that we need better agents, which I've passed on to our agents, who are really delighted with that suggestion. Okay, Roger, and your rest of your weekend looks like this in MLS.
Jeremy Roenick!
The Seattle Sounders play against the Portland Timbers, Rog. 9:30 p.m. Sunday on Fox Sports 1. Saw Portland play against NYCFC last weekend, Rog. That Darlington Nagby. I like the look of him. He doesn't have a J name, but he could be a very good player for the US men's national team, I think. Okay, there are many ways to connect to us. One is through our Amazon Emporium. Helps keep the show going. Anytime you go on Amazon for items big or small, just click off the Emporium page. Men and Blazers gets a tiny percentage that allows us to cover the cost of creating
the show.
Be able
to buy some Kleenex for JW and Ipswich.
Yeah, very sad. What are you going to put in the Amazon Emporium this week,
a
Rog?
Book.
Oh, you always put in a book.
But this is a special book, David.
Okay, they're all special books.
To mark Holocaust Remembrance Day.
Yeah.
I read a book called Red Love, a memoir of East Germany by Maxim Leo.
Uh-huh.
Published by one of my new favourite publishers. They're amazing, Pushkin Press.
Oh, yeah.
The writer, a journalist, retraced 3 generations of his family to understand how the war and its aftermath shaped the rifts and fault lines of his own identity, as well as Germany's modern East-West experience. It's haunting, and it's a testament to how ideology plus random chance shapes individual lives and collective societies. It's one of the best books I've read, Dave, in a long, long, long time. It's almost better than football.
Mine seems typically meaningless after that, Rog. I'm putting in a set of 4 5-inch Mini Cooper scale 28:1 model cars, Rog. There's one in blue, one in green, one in red, one in yellow. The blue and red ones are just like the ones we use on the TV show every single week. I bought a new Mini last weekend. I didn't want to put a John Cooper Works Mini into the Emporium. I'm not sure that they have those on Amazon, so I'm putting in these models instead. They're gorgeous. I just bought a set from a son, G.
Do they have a 4-door toy?
Not as of yet, Rog. I'll be waiting for the 4-door for the countryman.
How drunk must that man be when he wanders out into the street?
Oh, gets in the back of his car.
Gets in the back of his own car.
Yeah, or high. He might be high. You never know.
They make
on some kind of mild hallucinogen. There are many other ways to connect to us, Rog. We recently released Men in Blazers Unbuttoned. Now that's what I call Suboptimal Volume 2, the best of 2014 on iTunes,
it's on
Amazon,
the Billboard chart,
and Google. That's amazing, Rog. It's the most suboptimal moments from a year in which Liverpool nearly won the league and the USA nearly won the World Cup. Have a listen and then a sad nap. Also check out our Spotify account, men_in_blazers. Our third mixtape, the Sad Nap Edition, is now up. meninblazers.wikispaces.com/, that's a wonder of the modern world. And go to meninblazers.com. You can sign up for our newsletter, The Raven, which we produce with our partner, Guinness. Follow us on Twitter, at Embassy Davies, at Men in Blazers, at Rog Bennett, on Instagram, at Men in Blazers, at Embassy_Davies, and on Facebook. We've got a subreddit, meninblazers.reddit.com, maintained by GFOB's Akshay, Calvin and Alex. And you can always send your ravens to the crap part of Soho and email us at meninblazers@gmail.com.
Thanks to our producers.
Oh, they're sitting over there. So cute. JW and Lexi and Jen Simons. Vendorpunk Rog.
War pig.
Who wants to sex Mutombo?
Explosion.
Courage.
Take that, Gloria.
Is that your analysis?
To tweed.
Abrigado. Rock on, mate.
Kung Fu Fight America.
Everybody watch Below the Line on YouTube.
Good Josie.
We outpassioned them today.